So today we are on to Sutta number 8, it is the Salaika Sutta, another interesting sutta, has some interesting points to it. One of the interesting points is just four jhanas are not effacement, they are just pleasant abidings. And also the other part of this one which I really like, it was a simile of a person stuck in the mud, can't take out anyone else from the mud. Very famous simile. But this is all coming up soon. So here we go. Oh, someone else is coming in. Yes. Okay. Come.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami.
So this is the 8th sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, Salaika Sutta, effacement. What leka means is actually to scratch out. And it is the word which was used in the way to make the old palm leaf manuscripts, where they get the palm leaf, they'd dry it out, and they literally scratch the letters into that palm leaf, and then they put some glue in it, which was like ink, and then they would wash it all off, and so in the indentation called by the scratching, the letters would remain, and then they would varnish it over, and there you've got the first palm leaf manuscripts. So actually to scratch out, especially the letters, was part of writing, and so leka also became the word for a secretary. So I'm not sure what the word a secretary is in Sinhala. What's the word for secretary in Sinhala, Sanat? Anything to do with leka? I know in Thai they call them lekas, it's a secretary. So the secretary of the Sangharaja, the secretary of the abbot is called Leka. Yeah. Anyway, that's what it is, someone who scratches things out.
Leka.
Sorry?
Leka.
Yeah, that's the same one, yeah. So that's the same word as here. Salaika means with scratching out. So, thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Sarvateen Jeta's Grove on Natapindika's Park. Then, when it was evening, the Venerable Mahachunda, you know we've got a Chunda here, that's our little novice, he's not Mahachunda yet, but who knows, one day. Mahachunda rose from meditation and went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to the Blessed One, he sat down at one side and said to him, and of course I mentioned before, that's why if you go to Buddhist monasteries, you never stand or sit right in front of the monk or the nun, whoever's doing the teaching. We'll sit to one side. Venerable Sir, various views arise in the world associated with either doctrines of a self or with doctrines about the world. You'd want to see those, you've got the 63 wrong views in the Brahmajala Sutta. Things like the self exists after death or it doesn't exist after death, or that the world is eternal or not eternal, or both or neither. So those are all about the doctrines of, especially the self. We were talking just at tea time with Venerable Vedananda. The answer to the question of a self is in one of the Sanyutta Nikayas. You can't say there is a self because a fading away is seen. You can't say there's nothing because an arising is seen. So the Buddha says, I teach the middle way between non-existence and existence. And that middle way is called dependent origination. So that's the way which is out of the doctrines of non-existence or existence. Now, Chunda, as for those various views... Oh, sorry. Venerable Sir, various views arise in the world associated either with doctrines of a self or with doctrines about the world. Now, does the abandoning and relinquishing of those views come about in a bhikkhu who is attending only to the beginning of his meditative training? Chunda, as to those various views that arise in the world associated either with doctrines of a self or with doctrines about the world, If the object in relation to which those views arise, which are underlying, which are exercised upon, is seen as it actually is with proper wisdom, thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself, then the abandoning, relinquishing of those views comes about. In other words, they're saying here, if the in relation to what they underlie, what they are exercised upon, the underlying problem, if it's seen as the underlying problem, that which causes all those views to exist, in other words, the delusion of a self, if you see that this is not mine, now this is not me, this is not myself, then the abandoning, relinquishing of all those views comes about. So in other words, that you can see that all those views are based on the illusion of a self which isn't real. Then it could all go. And in particular, as one person was saying in the interviews, in the Kanda Sanyutta, the very beautiful similes of the five khandhas, the Rupa Khanda, the body, so it's based on some body idea. You see that the body is compared to what? Yes, the lump of foam on the river Ganges. So in other words, you know, you can get the lump of foam, you can have the form of this or form of that, but it's just foam, that's all. So that's your body, just foamy. So when you go get a bit crazy and go foaming at the mouth, you are just showing your real nature. And the next one is Vedana. And what is the simile of Vedana? Yeah, just the raindrop. Plop. And that's a very nice one, because the raindrop pop is just so quick and then it's over again. And hopefully today you had many Vedanas and seen many raindrops because it was raining today. So again, it's insubstantial, there's nothing there. Or you have perception. And what is the simile of perception?
Mirage.
Mirage, yes. So sometimes you can see this mirage on a hot day. Or you can see the rainbow in the sky, and you can run towards that rainbow, and the more you run towards the rainbow, the more the rainbow runs away from you. Just like jhana, just like enlightenment, just like all these other things which you take to be true, the mirages, perceptions. So it's just like a mirage. The nice thing about a mirage is you're not imagining the rainbow. It's not a delusion, it's not sort of an illusion, or not an illusion, it's not that you're not seeing the light reflected off the road, it's real. But you're giving it a meaning it does not deserve. It's just a mirage. So, the fourth one, the sankharas. And what is the simile for sankharas? The plantain tree, the banana tree. In other words, it's just a much powerful, like it's always a smart guy in class, teacher's pet. So in other words, you could take off all the leaves of the banana tree, you can't, it's a tree but it has got no pith, nothing you can make sort of timber out of and make a house out of, so it's just no substance to it. And of course the other simile, which came from Bhante Gunaratna, is he added to the... It's nice actually, when you take similes, work on them, don't just stay with what the Buddha said, work on them. And his simile, he called it an onion, just like a banana tree, just a lot of leaves around each other. You keep peeling it, and when you get to the centre of the onion, there's nothing there. And remember, I think I said this last time, the onion, the reason why it's a great simile, it goes on and on with an eye in the middle. That's the trouble with your sankharas, all your thoughts and constructions. It goes on and on and on, and right in the centre of all your constructions is this eye. And the other nice thing about the onion, when you try and peel it, what does it do? It makes you cry. That's sankharas, that's will. And the last one, the consciousness. The magician's trick. Which, amazing that I've told many of you that one of my friends from Cambridge, he became the head ghost hunter of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And I remember reading an article, I think in the Sunday papers here, written by him, some haunting. He said, whenever he goes to a haunting in United Kingdom, he always takes a professional magician with him. And he's still saying this, that one of his friends is a professional magician. He can take a coin and a rice grain, and he can pass the rice grain through the coin out to the other side. Now this is like a professor from Cambridge. He watches, he says, how the heck did he do this? It can't be done. It's just a trick. But these magicians are so sharp, they're so skilled, they can actually do this, and it looks like it's real. So that's why he sort of always takes a magician. So if there are any tricks of delusion, that the magician can suss it out straight away. So if any hauntings, he always takes a professional magician with him to make sure that it is real haunting and it's not just some trick. So that's like the consciousness. It can sort of pass this sense of self right through matter and say, oh, there's a sense of self there, it's just a trick, that's all. But it's nothing there. So that's why they say that it's in relation to those on what views arise, especially the five khandhas, you could say the six senses. That is what in relation to which it's talking about. When you see it's not mine, it's I'm not, this is not myself. All of your perceptions, all of your feelings, all of your will, all of your consciousness, it's on relation to that which the doctrines of a self or a world are built. You see that the basis on which they're built, the five khandhas or the six sense experiences, see that it's not mine. It's not me, not a self. Then all the views of the self, all the views about the world, all vanish. So that's what it really means there. Consciousness, just a magician's trick. Yes. Takes a rabbit out of a hat, there's no rabbit there.
Illusion.
Yes, just an illusion. Just like you, Richard, you're just a rabbit which somebody took out of the hat, but it's not really there. So please put it back in again. And your rabbit's not real either. Yes, Daniel.
Our rabbit is definitely my rabbit.
All the six consciousnesses, but especially when they go together, they flow together. That gives the illusion of a continuous self. That's what I said. You've heard me say before, when you see the particular nature of consciousness, one consciousness arising and then passing away, and another completely different type of consciousness arising and passing away, and seeing its particular nature, you realize it's not a continuous me, a self. It comes from causes, and when those causes disappears, so does consciousness. All types of consciousness, mind consciousness in particular, then you understand this cannot be mine. This I'm not, this is not myself. And of course it's not yours, you can't choose. Can you choose not to hear me? Try your hardest not to hear me. Try your hardest not to feel your body. You're doing that in your meditation, it's so difficult to do. If these really senses, if those sense consciousnesses were yours, you'd be able to stop them straight away. You have no control. They're not yours. They're just nature. Yes?
A quick question about the Kanda. I've read it so many times, but I can never seem to actually keep track in my mind of what differentiates consciousness from perception and formation.
Aha. So, especially the start from perception. Perception is that one aspect of conscious experience. So let's say you're watching a TV program. Okay, well you like the program or you don't, that's Vedana. The perception is actually what you see in that program. You know, you see sort of the sheriff and you see the Indian, and whichever one you sort of see in there, and it's amazing just how we can perceive that one is a good guy, one is a bad guy. You know, if you're sort of a lawbreaker, you see the bank robber is a good guy and the sheriff is a bad guy. It depends on how you've been trained. And you can see your will actually working. You know, you sort of, this is really interesting, turn the volume up. Or you get really involved in it. That's some of the sankhara. You start thinking about it. That's the sankhara. And the consciousness is like the screen on which all this is played. The consciousness is like the TV screen. But you can't have one without the other. You have to be conscious in order to have the sankhara, in order to have perception, in order to have feeling. So they're all aspects of one and the same sensory experience. So when you're experiencing something, you have consciousness, you have some sort of sankhara going on, usually some sort of reaction, and then you also have some effective part you like, you don't like, or in between, and also you're perceiving something. So there's just different aspects of a one conscious moment. That's why you can never separate them. You can't have consciousness without being conscious of something. Yes?
Can you separate them in the sense that you're conscious of something, so at a certain point you feel something?
Yeah, you can perceive the different aspects one after the other. But in one conscious experience, that's what perception does. It chooses one thing above another.
You start it before the sankhara.
Stop what?
The process.
Ah, no. This is not we're not talking about a process here. So part of that process, like a still frame of the movie, that's one sort of conscious experience. In one still frame, you have all those four or five. So in one still frame, you always have some consciousness, some sankhara, some perception, some vedana there.
But when you start,
you have an experience, you have mind, you have an object, you have one consciousness. Yep. Then you have contact. Yep. You want to test, has to happen. Yes, yeah. Then you have a feeling. Yep. Feeling is there. At that point, though, they say you can break the chain. No, you can't break the chain there. The chain is broken always at breaking delusion. So once you have vedana, you can have a perception there.
You have a feeling.
Yeah, but you'll also have a perception at the same time.
So you have a perception.
Yeah, you have a perception. That's also that sasankara will be there somewhere, even the thought.
It's all mixed up, because then, if you're talking about 12 points of illumination, if you're talking about it gets all confused there, because at that point, what happens before creating, right?
Yes. What happens is it is the sankharas. The sankharas are the second factor of the dependent origination. It's not the same meaning as the sankharas in the khandhas. Same word, different meanings because of different contexts. So, what really once avijja is stopped, then the sankharas are stopped. That's avijja is where it all stops. When you still see this, it's not me, not mine, not the self.
No,
If you're in samadhi, let it go. That's another thing.
You got the feeling, and you felt the feeling real quick, your mind is quick. You can just have a feeling and you don't let it go.
If you just leave it alone, you're totally letting it go, you're not trying to let it go, you let it go. Then, of course, it's just the vedana.
It's tricky. But those three categories get together.
But in this context here, is whenever you think it's my feeling, then you do something about it. So when you say this is not mine, this I'm not, this is not myself, with any of those candors, that's what we mean here about the thing in relation to which all these views arise.
So you're saying as a technique for acting in the meditation
I'm just saying in this sutta, they have this saying here, if the object in relation to which those views arise, which they underlie and which they are exercised upon. So I'm explaining that particular point. So I'm not going into dependent origination yet. It's just explaining this passage in the sutta. Because it doesn't actually say what it really means. If the object in relation to which those views arise, it's a complicated phrase here. I'm saying it's because of the khandhas. And when you see those khandhas, this is not mine, this I'm not, this is not myself, then all the basis of these views of the world and the self, all the philosophies vanish. So all that philosophy and all that type of proliferation, when you see this canvas, not me, not mine, not a self, then all of that sort of argument just vanishes. Yes, non-self.
the Buddha view, that exists in the perception kanda, or like the delusion is just the way kanda.
The delusion, if anything, I call that a sankhara, because that will create sort of the canvas in the future.
The delusion, like the wrong delusion, that's the sankhara?
I would say this, well, underlies sankharas, it causes sankharas. Delusion, pachaya, sankhara.
What does pachaya mean?
Causes. Yeah.
But in like, what kind of
you could classify it as a sankhara kanda. That's probably the best place which it belongs, but you know, it's underlying all the sankharas.
But it still has to be part of it. You can't say it's apart from it.
Yes, but yeah. So if you put anything, it can be a perception sankhara. Mm-hmm. This is mine. It can also be a sankhara. But it's also got a vena because it sucks. Underlies it, infects it, just like when you get a disease. So anyway, that's going off on a tangent. Yeah, explaining this particular. Anyway, the eight attainments. Sorry? Okay, yeah, wait. It is possible here, Chunda. Now this is actually, you see where it's coming from. This is the introduction here. He's talking about all these views arise in the world because of the, especially the five khandhas, and not regarded with proper wisdom. This is not mine, this is not myself. And then the abandoning, relinquishing of those views comes about. So it's how do we actually get to that stage of this is not mine, this I'm not, this is not myself? How do we scratch out that underlying wrong view? So, it is eight attainments, first of all. It is possible here, Chunda, that quite secluded from the five senses, secluded from the unwholesome states, some monk, nun, lay person enters upon and abides in the first jhana, which is accompanied by movement of the mind onto and holding the object with rapture and pleasure born of seclusion from the five senses. You might think thus, I am abiding in effacement. But it's not these attainments that are called effacement in the Noble One's disciples. They are called pleasant abidings here and now in the Noble One's discipline. I'll just go to the eight jhanas, and then we'll sort of comment on it. It is possible that here, with the stilling of this movement of the mind onto and holding the object, that some meditator enters upon and abides in the second jhana, which has this internal confidence that you don't need to do anything, you're totally letting go, and the singleness of mind without any movement, with the rapture and pleasure born of stillness. You might think thus, I'm abiding in effacement, but no, these are called pleasant abidings here and now in the Noble One's disciple. It's possible here that with the fading away as well as rapture, some meditator abides in equanimity, and mindful and fully aware, still feeling pleasure with that experience. When it says with the body, that is the idiom elsewhere in Pali, means it's just a personal experience. He enters upon and abides in the third jhana, on account of which the Noble Ones announce they have a pleasant abiding who has equanimity and mindful. They might think thus, I'm abiding in effacement, but no, these are called pleasant abidings here and now, the Noble Ones discipline. It is possible here that with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, with the previous disappearance of joy and grief, which means the sukha vedana, dukkha vedana, with not just the five senses, but with the sixth sense as well, that's the joy and grief, some meditator enters upon and abides in the fourth jhana, which has neither pain nor pleasure, and purity of mindfulness due to such equanimity. You might think thus, I am abiding in effacement, but it's not these attainments, as are called effacements in the Noble One's discipline. These are called pleasant abidings here and now in the Noble One's discipline. In other words, the illusion of me, mine and the self has not been overcome yet. So it's not effacement, it hasn't been scratched out. It may be the part of scratching out, but it hasn't been scratched out. So especially because the Chunda was saying, does the relinquishing of these views come about when you only attend to the beginning of the basic training, which is the jhanas? No, there's more to be done. Any questions or comments on that?
So, even with the jhanas, you know, after that, it's kind of putting down the jhanas in a way that, you know, you have to ask back.
And not putting down the jhanas, but putting them in their place. In other words, not to say just the jhanas, just because you get a jhana doesn't mean you're enlightened. Or not even the stream in there. But it doesn't mean they're not part of the path. It's just saying that in themselves they're not sufficient. Yet their wisdom as well. Yeah, or just like I say, you have the flashlight, but you don't have the map. You have the gunpowder, but not the light. Very good. Effacement means scratching out. No, it means scratching out these defilements. It's just like you've got a dirty windscreen, and you've got to scratch out the defilement so it's clean. So say, yeah, you've got the sort of the windscreen wiper, the jhana, but you haven't scratched it out yet.
We use this term self-effacing.
Oh yeah, that's totally different.
Totally different. Okay,
yeah. This is like scratching out. Okay. Sort of something.
It's also like we also understand like scratch out the illusion, looking at the cause of all this, right?
Yeah. It is scratching. It is actually getting rid of things. Doing what is necessary to abandon these defilements and abandon these wrong views. So how do you? Because it's like these views have been embedded in you for so many sort of lifetimes. And how do you actually dig them out? How do you take out the weeds? That's right, yeah. That's right, yeah.
And this one of the things that I noticed is, you know, like at the end he says, he might think that I abide in basement.
Yeah.
But the context of that wording, just the thing after the fact.
Yeah.
Is that what
indeed, because if anyone does attain a jhana afterwards, there's no hindrances, there's no defilements which are visible, which are experienced for long periods of time. And it is true that sometimes you get into these great meditations and afterwards would you think, this is it, I'm enlightened, no more defilements. So it's very easy for a person, and I'm sure this is one of the reasons of giving this sutta, to remind the meditators that after you've got a jhana, yeah, it feels like you're enlightened, you can't see any defilements, but just wait and make sure. You know that simile or that story I gave in that book about when I thought I was totally enlightened after my fourth rains, and when I got this curry, two curries, one of them was a rotten fish curry, which was disgusting, and the other one was a pork curry, which was half edible. And you know that story. I thought because I'd just become enlightened the evening before, this was the devas celebrating my attainment by giving me a decent meal that day. And so, I had no sort of defilements at all night. And then I was waiting for my pork curry, and the abbot in front of me took this huge serving of pork curry for himself. But I didn't mind because there's lots left. What he did next was to take the pot of pork curry and put it in the pot of rotten fish curry and stir it up, saying, it's all the same, it's all the same. And he said that after he took out his portion of just the pork curry. And it was just so hypocritical. And it was so unfair because this guy was a local boy. You know, he grew up on rotten fish curry. He should like it. Now, I'm not a northeastern Thai person, I was an English person. And he ruined my celebratory meal. I was so angry at him for doing that. And quite justifiably, you know, you've got your meal, you know, and the rotten stuff, and they put it all together and stir up after he took his own. And then I realised, oh my God, I'm not enlightened. That's really a doubter. So that's why he's saying it. Just it is possible here that just, you know, getting a jhana, you think you're abiding in effacement, but you've got to have a skilled abbot who mixes up your food with what you don't like, and then you realise whether you're abiding in effacement or not. And obviously, I wasn't. So this is the problem here. Sometimes you get some really good meditations, even great insights, and you think you're effaced, but no. So this is, you see what the effacement is going to be afterwards. And anyway, we go, there's the four jhanas. Also got the four arupas. It is possible here that with a complete surmounting of perceptions of form, the disappearance of perception of sensory impact, with non-attention to perception of diversity, with the awareness, in other words, the object of mind now is the I never like the infinity of space, you know, maybe being a scientist. I say the space having no boundary, no limits. And in the little book which I wrote, Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond, I gave this simile to give someone an idea of what these states are. A simile of present moment awareness. Because in present moment awareness, now time is infinite, unbounded. Because when you're really in the present moment, it's as if you've got all the time in the world. It's like an infinity of time. It's not bounded anymore by past and future. But in one of the other senses, there's no time there at all. It's just it's totally squashed between the past and the future. It's no time, but almost like feels like infinity of time. And that is actually where time is about to vanish. And that's why they call it sort of the infinite space. The whole idea of like space extension is just vanishing. So this is a state just as extension starts to vanish. And that's the what they call here infinity of space. And some meditator enters upon abides in this space of infinity of space, he might think, thus, I'm abiding in effacement. It's not the attainment that are called effacement, the noble one's discipline. These are called peaceful abidings in the noble one's discipline. It's possibly hereby completely surmounting the base of infinite space, aware that consciousness is infinite. In other words, just like present moment awareness, consciousness is about to fade. It doesn't have any meaning anymore. It's vanishing, it's disappearing. Some meditator enters upon and abides in the base of infinite consciousness. He might think, thus I am abiding in effacement, but these are called peaceful abidings in the noble one's discipline. It's possible here that by completely surmounting the base of infinite consciousness, in other words, consciousness is about to disappear, the light. Present moment awareness, time is about to disappear. This is consciousness about to disappear, and you go to the next stage, consciousness has disappeared. Aware that there's nothing, that's the object. Come out of that, what's happening? Absolute nothing. Some meditator enters upon and abides in the base of nothingness. He might think that, thus, I'm abiding in effacement, but these are called peaceful abidings of the noble one's disciples. And then, of course, nothing disappears. It is possible here that by completely surmounting the base of nothingness, some meditator enters upon and abides in the base of neither perception nor non-perception. As I explained that, as nothingness disappears, what you're perceiving is nothing left there, not even nothing. Nothing has vanished. But you're still perceiving that. So it depends on which angle you look at it from. If you look at it from this angle, yeah, you're perceiving. Looking at the object, you're not perceiving anything. So this is just when perception is about to vanish. You might think, I'm abiding in effacement, but these attainments are not called effacement in the noble one's discipline. These are called peaceful abidings in the noble one's discipline.
So this perception, that's why it's called peaceful
abiding. Peaceful abiding.
If you don't have perception, how can you have peaceful abiding?
Okay, because this is so still. You might call it like still abiding. So not the word of like peace, which is an object, but just so still that nothing is moving and everything's disappeared, vanishing. So this goal was like santo. It's where we get the word saint from. Sounds just so still and so peaceful. So it's a great question, because sometimes in meditation, you get to stages of meditation, it's just so incredibly peaceful. And then your mind drops to another level. And it's even more peaceful. I think that previous state, that was actually quite unpeaceful. But now this is really peaceful. As I'm not sure it was you or one of the interviewers they were saying that just they were on retreat and just come into the kitchen for the meal, which was so noisy, so disturbing, the kitchen. And I was saying, that's really interesting, because all these people who come from town, they come to the kitchen and they think it's so peaceful in this monastery. But for you, it's very noisy here. And this is actually what happens. You come from town and you come to, you know, this, this kitchen at lunchtime, which is so peaceful. But then if you go from there and you go to your room, and your room is so much more peaceful. But then you go into meditation, you come out of meditation, my room is so noisy. Even my cave is so noisy, so many things to look at. But in deep meditation, it's more peaceful. So if you're part of meditation, you go deeper into it, away from noise, and it goes more and more peaceful. And your body is just so noisy. So once your body disappears, it's so peaceful. And all this mind, it's just so noisy. When the mind disappears, it's just so peaceful. So you're actually just seeing just how profound peace can be.
After
jhana, yeah. So that's your question, yeah. So it's after you emerge afterwards, you say, wow, that was really peaceful. But the interesting there, there's no number 12. It is possible here by the completely surmounting the base of neither perception nor non-perception, that you enter the cessation of all perception and feeling. Sometimes they call that the ninth jhana. Why is that not included here? Yeah, because that's where you come out afterwards and Salaika has happened. If you enter that state of cessation and you emerge afterwards, there's only two possibilities. And those two possibilities are? That's right, yeah. Non-return or full emergence. So that's why it's not down there. Because that really would be effacement. Now, oh yeah. Yeah.
Could you kind of relate that to, so is it name and form that the cause or view of consciousness?
It seems to be that, just the way the whole thing works, that remember that consciousness needs to be stimulated in order to remain. Something needs to change. Otherwise, as every clinical psychiatrist would know, that if the brain was having a stimulus which remained the same, didn't change, the brain would turn off. Just like your computer, if you don't press the mouse, after a while it turns off. And you get a black screen. That's just like the brain. So the same way that because nothing is moving, little levels of consciousness are turning off. So the mind is actually turning off stage by stage. So you've got like nothingness. So you've got a perception of nothingness there, but that's the object there. So something is going to turn off in the brain. And you've got just a perception of no perception, and then there's nothing else to watch. So the object seems to vanish first, and then the thing watching that object vanishes afterwards. Okay. Okay. Now let's carry on with this. No, go on. Second sequence, yeah, but still something fading away. What's really fading away in the four jhanas, you know, as well as the body, is this the Vedana, especially the feeling of joy and pain.
or disappointment. So the Vedana part of the mind fades away, the four jhanas. And what fades away in the arupas is the mind itself. I cannot understand how the arupas can occur without the four jhanas before them. I always take the four arupas as a special case of the fourth jhana. It's so equanimous, so still, that things disappear. And the mind disappears now. Okay, now that's not really a placement. You can see why Chunda's asking this question, because probably few of those monks who were in his presence there were thinking they were already enlightened because they get these jhanas. So no, this is what effacement is. Now Chunda, here effacement should be practiced by you. Others will be cruel. We shall not be cruel here. Effacement should be practiced thus. So you can see what this effacement is. It's taking away these negative defilements. Others will kill living beings. We shall abstain from killing living beings. Others will take what is not given. We shall abstain from taking what's not given. Others will be uncelibate. We shall be celibate here. Others will speak falsehood. We shall abstain from false speech here. Others will speak maliciously. We shall abstain from malicious speech here. What malicious speech means is actually malicious gossip. It's actually repeating there what you've heard here in order to divide people. So if there is any problems, like the bhikkhuni ordination or like any other sort of problem, we don't actually repeat all these things to create problems for each other. Because the opposite of that is we like harmony. We want to sort of keep people together. So it's malicious gossip. Harshly, others will speak harshly. We should abstain from harsh speech here. And that is obviously calling people pigs, camel face, or any other sort of harsh word. Others will gossip, which means like useless speech. We should abstain from gossip here. Others will be covetousness. We shall be uncovetous here. Others will have ill will. We shall be without ill will. Others will be of wrong view. We shall be of right view. And those last 10, from number 2 to 11, are called what? Who knows what they're called? Yes, the 10 akusala dhammas, the dasa akusala dhammas. But also, number 11, as well as being the last of the 10 unwholesome comers, is also the first of the wrong eightfold path. Others will be of wrong view, we should be of right view. Others will be of wrong intention, we should be of right intention. Others will be of wrong speech, we should be of right speech. We already had right speech there, but not speaking falsehood, malicious, harsh or gossip. So it's repeated here. Others will be of wrong action. We shall be of right action here. Others will be of wrong livelihood. We shall be of right livelihood. Others will be of wrong effort. We shall be of right effort. Others will be of wrong mindfulness. We shall be of right mindfulness. Others will be of wrong concentration. We shall be of right concentration. That's the Eightfold Path. Now you see already, as I like pointing out when I do the sutta, we shall be of right concentration. What is right concentration? Fourth jhanas, and that's effacement should be practiced thus, by practicing the jhanas. What's the difference between what was said at the beginning, what's said here? It's actually understanding here that what really is a defilement here is understanding what is wrong and what is right, concentrating that particular view and knowledge, insight into what's right samadhi, what's wrong samadhi. So it's not just practicing the samadhi, it's understanding why it is the right samadhi rather than the wrong one. Others will be of wrong knowledge, we should be of right knowledge. Others will be of wrong deliverance, we should be of right deliverance. Sometimes that becomes not the eightfold path, but the tenfold path. Because if you look, one of the things I like saying is that when I started reading the Anguttara Nikaya, the ones, twos, threes, fours, fives, six, sevens and eights, you know, you'd expect the five khandhas, yeah, they're in the fives, the five hindrances, the six senses are in the six, the seven enlightenment factors, they're in the sevens, and then the eight, no eightfold path. There's no eightfold path in the section of eights. I thought, this is weird. And you've said you find it in the tens. lots of sutras on the tens of the Eightfold Path because they always add number 9 and number 10. And number 9 is the right knowledge, samanyana, and the right deliverance, I think vimutti. So actually in the Anguttara they have this Tenfold Path. It's only the Tenfold Path because the 8 is the path and the 9 and 10 is the results. Deep insight and deliverance. So that's the Tenfold Path. Or the ten factors. 8 path and 2 results. Yeah.
Ajahn, what is wrong samadhi?
Wrong samadhi is... Well, wrong samadhi is, as I said last week, the stillness of the guard at Buckingham Palace. Down through control. So it's done, because remember samadhi, stillness, so it's the wrong time, it's coming from the wrong causes. So having gone through the 10 factors of deliverance, Eightfold Path with the two ones at the end, now we have others will be overcome by sloth and torpor. We should be free of sloth and torpor. Others will be restless. We should be free of rest. We should not be restless. Others will be doubters. We should go beyond doubt. So, what are those? Those are three of the 5 frequencies. What happened to the other two? The first two. That's right. They were mentioned earlier. Number 9 and 10. Covetousness and ill will. Sorry? Yeah. Right. So they've already been done. So you've got the getting rid of the hindrances as part of effacement. Others will be angry. We should not be angry. Others will be resentful. We should not be resentful. Others will be contemptuous. We should not be contemptuous. Others will be insolent. We should not be insolent. Others will be envious. We should not be envious. Others will be avaricious. We should not be avaricious. Others will be fraudulent. We should not be fraudulent. Others will be deceitful. We should not be deceitful. Others will be obstinate. We should not be obstinate. Others will be arrogant. We should not be arrogant here. Others will be difficult to admonish. Up to that point over there to arrogance, then you know where that series came from? Last week? Remember those stuff from the last week? They had those things there as well. Where have they? Oh, no. Yeah, no, maybe the week before. But for those whole list of... Yeah, it was last week, yeah. If you look at paragraph 3 last week, covetousness, unrighteous greed, ill will, anger, resentment, contempt, insolence, envy, avarice, deceit, fraud, obstinacy, rivalry, conceit, arrogance. We just got down to arrogance. And this last week carried on with lazy and unmindful. But here we add a few more. Others will be difficult to admonish. We should be easy to admonish here. Effacement should be practiced thus. And that means when someone admonishes you and says, what is it? Say, Nicholas, you don't come to Bodhinyana Monastery enough. And say, but I have to do this, I have to do that, and other people don't come here at all. That's being difficult to admonish. And you say, okay, I'll try my best. So don't be difficult to abolish. Others will have bad friends. We should have good friends here. Now this is Kalyana Mitta, and of course I'll pause there because that's really, really important to have good friends, because having good friends, being with good people, it brings you along. You know that old story of the elephant and the robbers? And that story I told here before, because the elephant, behind the elephant stall, the robbers would meet every night. And just that amount of influence made the elephant turn from being a good elephant to being a bad elephant. And so when the Bodhisattva saw that, he had all the robbers arrested, and he got the monks to go and talk on Dhamma behind the elephant stall every night. And after a short while, the elephant became a good elephant again. Just because of association. That's why our cat is a good cat, because of the association with the good monks. But because it hangs out in the kitchen sometimes, that's where it gets all its defilements of watching so much. We're the lay people, not you guys. So who you associate with? So keep good friends. Yes. Peace, yes. But what the Buddha said, it's much better to wander lonely like the rhinoceros or the rhinoceros horn. Don't associate with the fools. Associate with the wise. That's a great blessing, if you can. Now we go as we had before. Others be negligent. That's pamada. We should be diligent here. Others will be faithless. We shall be faithful here. Others will be shameless. We shall be shameful. Others will have no fear of wrongdoing. We shall be have fear of wrongdoing. Now what that means, that's a hiriyanotapa. And the shamelessness is, it's interesting, it almost is a little bit of a sense of self. I feel, oh, why did I do that for? That's not really appropriate for me. The fear of wrongdoing is understanding the law of karma. If you do something wrong, it's going to bite you. Others will be of little learning. We should be of great learning here. So he's even saying that, you know, you should learn these suttas. It's not just meditating and think that's going to be good enough. If you can learn, if you can understand Pali, if you can sort of read the suttas a lot and remember them, that's good. To be of great learning is important for effacement. Others will be lazy, we should be energetic. Others will be unmindful, we should be established in mindfulness. Others will lack wisdom, we should possess wisdom here. And lastly, and always saving the best for the last in this list, because remember these are, Buddha was talking to monks who probably thought they were enlightened because they had the jhanas, and he said this is not effacement, and to press the point, others will adhere to their own views, hold on to them tenaciously and relinquish them with difficulty. We shall not adhere to our own views or hold on to them tenaciously, but shall relinquish them easily. Effacement should be practiced thus. So it's all about the wrong views these monks had. And say, no, please, you know, if you see a much better view, please let go of them. So don't hold on to these views. I understand that unless one is enlightened, these views are only tentative, just for the time being, but not based on total reality. So that's effacement. So you can see what effacement is here. Overcoming the defilements which express having things like anger, ill will, laziness, avariciousness, deceitfulness, or whatever. Overcoming the wrong factors of the Eightfold Path. Overcoming the five hindrances. Overcoming, right, hiri and otapa. So overcoming ahiri and anotapa. Overcoming laziness and overcoming stubbornness. So that's what the Buddha was saying. You should, it's called effacement. Yes. It's Panya. That's right, yes. In other words, wisdom is using Four Noble Truths, dependent origination, no self, anicca, dukkha. Yeah. That's wisdom.
And is the Pali word of this Panya?
It's Panya, yeah.
Should be practiced here, but that seems to allow
us a little room. Yeah, there's lots of room here. This is, again, like most of these lists, this is an example of the sorts of things which you have to get rid of, which are known as defilements. So they are what's called prescriptive, no, not proscriptive. So it doesn't complete all the things. You don't tick this off. Yeah, one, two, now I've done number 44, therefore I've effaced. So there's all other ones which, especially Westerners, have invented which aren't in this list. Which we also have to sort of somehow find a way through. But it's all these things which are based on me, mine and the self. So once you go back to that, once you see that and get rid of the delusion of the self, then all these 44, they vanish because they're all based. As it said here in the beginning, it's in relation to which those views arise which underlie, which are exercised upon, is seen as actually with proper wisdom. So that's actually the way to overcome these things. As I mentioned in the simile of the hand, you're always picking up something, and when you start attaching to things, these are the things which you can experience: anger, resentful, contemptuous, insolent, because you're attaching to something. And how do you stop picking things up? There's only one way of stopping picking things up: cut off the hand. And once you've got no hand, then you don't pick things up anymore. So if you don't do that, the hand will always be picking things up, because that's what a hand does. And that's simply, the hand stands for your sense of self. As long as there's a me, there's a mind, there's a sense of self, you'll always be attaching to something or other. Which means you're always going to be doubting, angry, resentful, contemptuous, insolent, unmindful, lazy, shameless, faithless, negligent, and you can't stop it. And the reason is because the thing which is based on hasn't been overcome. But as soon as you cut off your hand, you can't pick up anything. As soon as there's no self, all these things vanish. That's how effacement actually works. So you don't have to worry, Richard. You get rid of the underlying cause and everything else falls apart. All done.
Is it not the hardness of the emotion behind these defilements that make the sense of self seem stronger when you practice the longer?
No, it's the hardness. It's just the repetitive nature of them. Especially things like angry. When you get angry, you really exist. What do you ask that question for, Nicholas? You stupid, allegorical, noisy. And you see, actually, you really get sort of involved in that. You really think you are somebody. That's only an example, by the way. I still like you.
Is that what's strengthening this sense of the solid
self? Yeah, you're doing something.
How you see how those sort of emotions seem to have a sense of like a realness to them.
Have a sense of realness. Because they're coming from you. It's as if they're emanating from who you are. You're the angry person, you're the shameless person, you're the lazy person, you're the envious person. I'm obstinate, I'm arrogant, I'm difficult to admonish. It's where you build up your sense of self from. Okay, now the same 44 come again. Only this time with inclinations of mind. Chandra, I say that even the inclination of mind towards wholesome states is a great benefit. So what should be said of body and verbal acts conforming to such a state of mind? So even if you haven't managed to do it by body or speech yet, as long as you're inclining towards that, you're training yourself towards that, my mind will be inclined thus, others will be cruel, I should not be cruel. Even if you can't do that, but at least you're inclining towards it, that's what your mind leads towards. That is a great benefit. And so the mind should be inclined thus, others will kill living beings, others will take what's not given, be uncelibate, speak falsehood, speak maliciously, speak harshly, gossip, be covetous, have ill will, have wrong view, wrong intention, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood. Wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, wrong stillness. Others will be of wrong knowledge, wrong deliverance, have sloth and torpor, restless, doubters, angry, resentful, contemptuous, insolent, envious, avaricious, fraudulent, deceitful, obstinate, arrogant, difficult to admonish, have bad friends, negligent, faithlessness, be shameless, have no fear of wrong doing, little learning, lazy, unmindful, lack of wisdom, and be dear to their own views. But my mind will not be inclined to those faults. Our minds will be inclined to others will adhere to their own views, hold on to them tenaciously and relinquish them with difficulty, but I shall not adhere to my own views or hold on to them tenaciously, but shall relinquish them easily. My mind will incline that way. Or, the Buddha says, Chunda, suppose there were an uneven path and another even path by which to avoid it. And suppose there were an uneven ford and another even ford by which to avoid it. In other words, when you go back to your hut tonight, you could make a shortcut straight to the forest, over the rocks and through the trees, but that is not recommended. Those of you going back to Jhana Grove, you can make a shortcut, like as a crow flies, straight from here just over the wall, under the fence, through the bushes. But there is an even path to avoid that crooked path, and that is recommended. In other words, if you go the crooked path, the uneven path is a lot of suffering. So, a person given to cruelty has no cruelty by which to avoid it. In other words, it's a beautiful path. So why take the awful path? Killing living beings, taking what's not given, uncelibacy has celibacy by which to avoid it. False speech has abstention from false speech, malicious speech, harsh speech, gossip. Covetousness, ill will, wrong view, wrong intention, speech, action, livelihood, effort, mindfulness, stillness, knowledge, deliverance, sloth and torpor, restlessness, doubt, anger, resentment, contempt, insolence, envy, avarice, fraud, deceit, obstinacy, arrogance, being difficult to admonish, having bad friends, being negligence, faithlessness, shamelessness, fear of wrongdoing, little learning, laziness, unmindfulness, lack of wisdom. They have another path by which to avoid it, which is less suffering. One given to adhere to your own views, holding on to them tenaciously, relinquishing with difficulty, has the opposite. Not adherence to your own views, not holding on to them tenaciously, relinquishing them easily. A path to avoid it. In other words, there is an alternative. You don't have to have those problems. And there's a way leading upwards. Chunda, just as all unwholesome states lead downwards, and all wholesome states lead upwards, so too, a person has given to cruelty has no cruelty to lead you upwards. Killing living beings and all those other things, abstention from those things, leads you upwards rather than downwards. So it's not just upwards into a good rebirth. It's also upwards on the path to higher attainments. In other words, leads you closer and closer towards enlightenment. Now, in paragraph 16, you have one of the famous similes here. So that's why I'll try to get to this reasonably quickly. Chunda, the one who is themselves sinking in the mud, should pull out another who is sinking in the mud is impossible. The one who is not sinking in the mud should pull out another who is sinking in the mud, that is possible. So the one who is untamed, undisciplined with defilements, unextinguished, should tame another, discipline them, and help them extinguish the defilements is impossible. The one who is themselves tamed, disciplined, extinguished, should tame another, discipline them, and help extinguish their defilements, that is possible. So in other words, don't go off and be a teacher too soon, because if you've got lots of defilements and you haven't trained yourself, if you haven't done some decent meditation going wise, you're trying to teach other people, especially here in the West, they say hypocrites. You know, you teach us meditation, but you can't even meditate yourself for your life. You know, you teach us to give up, you know, all your defilements, but look at you, all the defilements you have. So, you know, if you're stuck in the mud, you can't teach other people to get out of the mud. So similarly was, if you're especially in the paddy fields, because those paddy fields were very muddy, you had to be standing on the dike and then you could pull somebody up. It is if you're not enlightened. So get enlightened first. If you haven't, as I said I think last week, or saw somebody, if you haven't qualified as a doctor yet, don't do surgery on your mum.
But it's not saying you can't help people. Oh,
you can't help them, but you can't really pull them out of the real mud.
Yeah, because it says, like, don't do fools if you're not.
That's right, yes. You can still help. So, a person given to cruelty has non-cruelty by which to extinguish it. Killing living beings has abstention from killing living beings by which to extinguish it. And taking what's not giving, uncelibacy, false speech, malicious speech, harsh speech, gossip, covetousness, ill will, wrong view, wrong intention, wrong speech, action, livelihood, effort, mindfulness, concentration, knowledge and deliverance, sloth and torpor, restlessness, doubt, anger, resentment, contempt, insolence, envy, avarice, fraud, deceit, obstinacy, arrogance, difficult to admonish, making bad friends, negligence, faithlessness, shamelessness, fear of wrongdoing, little learning, laziness, unmindfulness, lack of wisdom, adherence to wrong views,
One given to adhere to your own views and holds on to them tenaciously, relinquish them with difficulty, has not adherence to your own views, not holding them tenaciously, relinquish them easily by which to extinguish it. So that's the dry, that's not the mud. One's the mud, one's the dry land. So get on that dry land, and you can also help other people to do that. Now, one of the reasons I reckon the Buddha kept on repeating these things again and again and again, as they usually do in the Pali Suttas, as you read them again and again, there's so much repetition. I try to repeat as much as possible, but still very quickly. Over here in the books, it's just got 3 to 43, one given to dot, dot, dot to lead him upwards. So there's a lot of abbreviation in these books here to save a bit of space with printing, but as the Buddha would teach this, he would actually teach it in full. So these things would be repeated many, many times, and it was a teaching technique just to make sure that people remembered what these problems were which they were supposed to be scratching out, effacing. So the repetition there, even though in the West, because we don't have much patience, now we think that that's boring, but remember its whole purpose, you know, the whole learning by rote, is to reinforce the message again and again and again to be able to get through. So it was a teaching tool. And the whole point was that these are the things to get rid of. So if you've got jhana, but you've still got these other things come afterwards, you haven't finished yet. You had a nice meditation, you get angry at the abbot for mixing the two curries up, that's not effacement yet. Ah, you don't have them just after the jhana, but afterwards, like Devadatta. You know, afterwards, they can come up, because the jhanas, they give you the opportunity to see clearly, but they just suppress the defilements for the time being. So they haven't been totally overcome. So how do you totally overcome them? By seeing the basis on which they all worked out. By in relation to which those views arise, which the underlying which I exercised upon is seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. Seen as it actually is, that's Yathā Bhūta Jñāna Dasana. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. It will be possible from the jhanas. One of the problems is they might see those jhanas, like, this is the real me. This is who I truly am. This is my real self. The blissful pure jhanas. And if that's the case, then you'll get all these defilements coming up later on.
Is it helpful to think of even present moment awareness as being an aspect of pleasant defilement?
Yeah, it's very pleasant. But remember, present moment awareness is not you. It's not yours. It's not yourself. So you won't always be able to keep it, because it doesn't belong to you.
So I guess in a way, seeing it as pleasant body helps the mind to value it.
Oh yeah, so pleasant abidings is encouraged by the Buddha, pleasant abidings. Yeah.
From the Buddha to there, for example.
Correct, yeah.
Sort of places like maybe, say, northeast Thailand.
Yeah.
Maybe southern China, something like that where there's.
Yeah, the. Elsewhere they say that you do need Aryas, noble ones, even stream winners are enough to be able to pull somebody else out of the mud. As it said, the two causes, two important causes, necessary causes for someone being a stream winner is Yonisamanasikara and Paratagosa. And Paratagosa is the words of another Aryan. So to be able to teach and explain. Apparently it does, yeah, and that's fair enough. But obviously having someone to explain it to you helps.
I think what you just said about being in the jhanas and thinking, oh, this is me, I think that's the Hindu self-realization.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
reckon. That's right, yeah. So, and sometimes, I mean, you know that sometimes afterwards they get obstinate and proud.
Yeah, yeah.
You were telling me about that the other day.
Yeah.
So you can see, you get the jhanas, but so it's not effacement yet, it's more to be done.
And it's not that insight, I think.
No, it's not the insight yet. You need both. The jhana is at the insight. Yes.
To bring this down to a very simple level, because we're talking very high level. This sutta is part of the radical training, and the repetition that you're talking about is very important. Repeat it over and over again.
Yeah.
And through the sutta, reading the sutta, so that is, if you read it from the real sutta, that would be repeated many times, and very deep. And obviously these 44, because it sounds confusing, but 44 is actually most likely fills up all the possibilities that we normally encounter. Of course you can make like others, but they pretty much cover everything. And these are things you can work on. These are not abstract things at all. This is a very good training. You can pick any one or two and work on it for a week, a month, a year.
That's very good. That's a very good point, because you get things like obstinacy or anger, or stubbornness, insolence, contempt. There's no...
For you.
Yeah.
Go through the list this week or this month,
yeah.
And maybe this is the one for me now.
But yeah.
It changes all the time. I've been working on this for a year or so, and it keeps changing. It will change all the time. But these are very good. It's a good list to go through.
You say,
and you pick something, and before you go to sleep, when you wake up in the morning, in the afternoon, and think about it, and it will wear away. That's the whole idea of the sutta, is wearing away slowly.
That's right, yeah.
It's, because it, enlightenment, you know, we talk about jhanas and all that, but we have to weaken a lot of things before you can get even to the jhana.
Very good.
It's the way of the weakening.
Yeah, so you can always weaken these things. But please don't take a year for each one, otherwise it'll be 44 years before. Go on.
Okay, picture that seems to emphasize effacement.
Yeah.
More over like prisoners by them. Often you hear Dhamma talk, and the right stillness is sort of seen as like something that's. Really essential.
Indeed, yeah. But what the Buddha's actually doing here is pointing out these guys probably already had the meditation, but you know, they were sort of forgetting that that's not the whole thing, that whenever they have any of these defilements manifest, so they should deal with those defilements and efface them, scratch them out, and also bless it by seeing non-self. And obviously just not indulge in them, try and restrain them, and try and stop them. So this is actually why he was teaching this, especially to this group of people. Remember that just as someone once said, Ajahn Chah, he doesn't teach the Dhamma, he teaches as a person. In other words, it's not some sort of theory which you say, you know, this is the theory of Buddhism and this is it. They teach a particular person. So if the Buddha was teaching Matt, he would give a totally different spin than if he was teaching Daniel. He was teaching things which was according to the abilities and also the particular situation of the people in front of him. So this was especially to those disciples of Chunda. Now Chunda was probably an arahat by this time. But what he would have done, he'd have brought his disciples with him to see the Buddha. And the Buddha would be addressing Chunda, but he'd be really speaking this to the disciples who were with Chunda at the time. That's probably why the Chunda did this. They probably wouldn't listen to Chunda, but if it's from the Buddha, they might listen to. Okay, guys, you know, great you got jhanas, but please put some attention on these other things. I don't know, because there's so many lists all over the place. Yeah, it probably is, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there could be some more here, some more there. That's why I say it's prescriptive, not proscriptive. So it gives me an idea of the sort of things which are defilements. Yes?
It sounds a bit more judgmental than what you would teach by yourself, because you seem to say more it's being at peace with your defilements, because as long as you're not an arhat, you'll have these defilements, and
That's right. That's actually, that's why it's nice that it says you incline the mind towards these things. So incline is not sort of pushing the mind. It's just, you know, you lean towards a non-obstinacy. You lean towards non-cruelty. Sometimes you just can't do it because it's your old habits. You're inclining towards that way. So eventually you'll get there. So it's nice. I like that way. It's like a gentle inclining towards it at your own rate.
Is that process supported by a perception of what is suffering?
That's right, that's why you say there's the uneven path and the even path. So you understand that? You know, why do you go on an uneven path when there's an even one there? You know, why sort of, you know, go through the bush? Well, you know, all these monks over the years have made these nice paths and nice roads and actually gates so you don't have to walk and climb over the wall. So because those things are there, and they use them.
Is it due to the social forms of the lower realms?
Sorry?
You can go to the hell realms, the lower realms. So it is pretty, you know, at this point.
Yes, right, yes.
It's not just, you know, yeah, I can easy,
yeah. Oh, yeah, but I mean, I think most...
It is pretty, you know, he's using pretty, you know,
yeah, but I think most of those monks would have been pretty sort of high-minded people. So I don't think there would be... too many would be likely to go to the hell realms, but just like inclining. But these are problems. If they keep following those defilements, yeah, they'll probably just disrobe and just do all sorts of nasty stuff. So, but especially being angry, being cruel, kill living beings. So, I think mostly he was just saying, well, these are really what the defilements are. So, if there's any of those defilements manifesting in you, no, you haven't. You know, you've still got some work to do. You've still got some effacement to do. And so it's still a problem. So I think it's mostly pointing out there's a problem there, you guys. You're not finished yet. That's how I take the sutta. And also not sort of being sort of judgmental in the sense you're a bad, sinful person, you're doing these things, but inclined towards them, seeing that, you know, you've got a choice there, the uneven road or the even road. You know, going upwards or going downwards, that's probably where, you know, you were coming from, going to the hell realms. Yeah, they do lead to a bad rebirth. But also, you know, just, you know, the idea of, like, you're going up in the spiritual path, going to higher states of experience, more peace, more kindness, more beauty. Yes, the passing on.
The whole Sutta focuses forward, new friends, focuses around other people. Other people will
be, yeah,
and I will not.
That's right, yeah.
And reflecting on this, because we will be around other people who are doing other things and maybe wrong, so-called wrong things,
yeah.
Not in the judgment but obviously there are wholesome things, there are skillful things, and there are unskillful things and unwholesome things. And he's pointing out which are the wholesome ones. We say not to be influenced by these other people.
Yeah.
And saying not only to incline, because when you're with other people who are doing such things, we not only have to incline, we have to really make a determination.
Yeah.
For example, if you want to become you want to attain jhana, you can't just say, okay, I'll just sit every day and I'll attain the jhana. You have to actually make a determination. This is what I'm going to do. If you don't make that determination, no matter what you do, it won't happen by chance. It's not, things don't fall usually. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, it's cause and effect.
Yes.
So you have to know what the causes are.
But you have to make a pretty strong determination. And I think here, he's talking about a pretty strong determination for most of this, rather than the word inclination here is cheap and pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a little strong. It's not just...
I like the idea of the inclining of the mind, because you do too strong a determination, that just screws your mind up and you get into... Because most of the strong determinations comes from the sense of me and mine. It becomes a spiritual materialism again.
But if you don't make a determination, so like for example, when you ordain as a monk, or as a anubharaka, where you can take precepts, it's a determination of some sort. First you have an intention. You have some kind of intention. And then you make a resolution. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. But these are just words now, that's the problem. But when you say, make a determination, it's forever. in my mind, when I make a determination, it's forever. Whatever that means.
I'll be careful.
You can bring it up again in your mind after you lose it.
Because
an intention, you will, I have this intention, but tomorrow I don't have this intention, and the next week I don't even remember that intention.
The problem is that sometimes if one is deluded, one makes all these determinations and they're totally stupid, and afterwards you say, my goodness, I determined to do this and determined to do that. Just like that, when I made a very, very strong determination after my first waysak as a lay person, I'm going to become enlightened today. The Buddha could do it, so I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
There was determination made in total stupidity. I will go back to my room in Cambridge and I will not move from my seat. Even though my blood dries up and my bones turn to dust, I'm not going to move until I become enlightened too. The thing of Buddha was, I'm just the same as him. You know, he didn't have the great education I had and all the knowledge I have. I can do it too. But that determination, it was obviously determination made out of stupidity. And if I hadn't given that up, I would have been in hospital.
The kind of determination. I know you're tired. You know, very relaxed. Money wants to relax. But if for most people, and we're pretty relaxed actually. Most people are too relaxed. We're mostly too relaxed in a sense.
We
don't take it seriously enough. And so we say, next week or next month or next year or next lifetime.
So that's not being in the present moment.
Yeah.
So,
but
I understand your point. You got to find a middle way. And you know it's a middle way. The simile of the lute. So it just makes a beautiful sound. Not too strong, not too tight, not too loose. And you know that because the meditation is so easy and beautiful and peaceful. So that's where you find out your own degree of what your effort is necessary. One more, then shut up. I would replace you.
It's funny, this is true. I have to tell you the truth. Before, I was very determined. Before I met you, determined. Even when I met you, very determined. And then I gave up all that determination.
Very good.
Very good. And then everything started to fall into place because I gave it up. But would I have gotten to the place I'm in now if I hadn't made all those determinations before? Would the Buddha have been the Buddha, given up all the stuff, if he didn't have the 6 years of austerity?
Yeah.
That's the question. It's a big question.
Yeah, and the answer is, it's a gross answer. Would my mother be my mother if she had balls? It's a stupid question. You can't say the Buddha was the Buddha. I heard that from someone a long time ago. It's a bit odd. Okay. Anyway, so we had a question.
It just seems like what Thomas was asking, because I've had that feeling too when you read the suttas, because I all the Dhamma I had read sort of before I read Theravada, like suttas, the suttas, before, it's more like be at peace, accept, just love everything, sort of. And does that seem to just reflect the fact that people in the West have huge guilt complexes about everything, and maybe that wasn't
the way. No, it is a way, but it's just how you get there. How do you get to be at peace? How do you get to be kind? How do you get to be diligent? That's the goal. That's what they say here. The goal, in a sense, is, we shall have good friends. We shall be diligent. We shall be energetic. We shall be possessed of wisdom. We shall be easy to let go of our views. And we all know those are beautiful goals. So in this sutta, if you'd actually put it around, instead of saying others will be shameless, we should be shameful here. You put the good thing first of all. Nachunda, here effacement should be practiced by you. We should be kind, even though others will not be kind. We should look after living beings, while others may kill living beings. We should just be generous while other people might steal. We should be celibate. Other people are uncelibate. We should always tell the truth rather than others speak falsehood. So you put the positive first rather than the negative. It gives a different spin to the sutta. That's why a lot of times when you're actually teaching in the West, instead of starting with the negative, which is where you get the idea of judgmentalism, others will kill living beings, but we won't. Yeah, just we'll be kind. Say, oh yeah, we understand that. Even though others are not kind. Oh yeah. So sometimes with the spin of a sutta, by putting the positive first of all, changes the whole tone of the sutta. And that's why that you know that I mentioned this in the preface to one of the books. First coming over here, you started teaching the Four Noble Truths, and it wasn't working. So instead of saying suffering, the cause of suffering, you started saying happiness, the cause of happiness, unhappiness, and the cause of unhappiness, just changing the order of the Four Noble Truths. Because that made people interested. You start suffering, the cause of suffering, you know, just basic psychology. The first message you present sort of colours up the rest of the message. So it is important to have those aspirations. And this is what we're supposed to be doing. You know, we want to sort of try overcome our defilements. And there are defilements. You know, we say bad things to each other sometimes. We're sometimes lazy and malicious, a bit too harsh, a bit too sort of much attachments. And we know those things. So we've got to be honest about it. They're, you know, things which we need to deal with. So how do we deal with them? So here it doesn't really say so much how it's done. It just says, you know, these are the things which are problems here. So if you still have these things, you know, there's still work to be done. You'll be honest. And the nice thing about this is how it's to be done. The nice thing about it, which I keep coming back to, is understanding the whole underlying cause, which is the sense of self. As long as there's a sense of me and mine and being in here, then you'll be able to lessen these bad qualities, but you won't really be able to overcome them totally. And even just inclining the mind towards them, inclining the mind towards these beautiful states of mind. And that's actually why you're here, and why everyone comes here, because they want to incline to something peaceful and beautiful, wisdom and kindness. So just inclining is a beautiful, gentle way. You're not just saying, okay, it's okay to be cruel and stupid and to be jealous. So no, I realise it's a defilement. I'm going to try and incline so I'm not jealous anymore. This beautiful middle way of the Buddha, how do you actually do that? That's the beauty of it. It's actually in the Eightfold Path. It's kindness, gentleness, peace.
Have loving kindness towards yourself and your defilements.
Exactly, yeah. Well, actually, just if you have loving kindness towards your defilements, they're not defilements anymore. If you love your enemies, they're not enemies anymore. Is there any other questions at the back or somewhere?
It seems that it was the first eight precepts, and there was the sinking and loving, and pulling others out of the bottom. Keeping precepts like that at arm's length, is that fine? For example, like if I'm a single lay person, have sex with a married woman, or vice, rolls up from the beef, or lies meat from beef, or are these things?
Okay. Well, you have like having sex with the wife of another married person. If she's married to a bikie, you're going to be in big trouble when the bikie finds out. Or married to a lawyer. So there's obviously problems there, because you know, there's infidelity. And, you know, the attachments of people, it's going to cause a lot of suffering. So that's why breaking those precepts, it is the uneven road. You know, you're going through thickets and over very dangerous areas. You might get away with it, but it's very, very dangerous. As you noticed, all the problems reading newspapers about people doing those sort of stupid things. So precepts are there to protect you from suffering. Oh, you cause others to break them. So it's very hard to actually to be the main cause for others to break precepts. Now they make their own choices. So you can tell your friend, why didn't you go and sleep with that girl? Even though she's married, they won't do that unless they really want to. They're not going to follow your orders or suggestions. So a lot of times, people make their choices. So it's, you're not really responsible for them. It's obviously an unskillful thing to do, to tell people to break precepts, but really it's up to them. Okay, yeah? Because everybody's been working very hard and been chasing things. So had plenty of craving and attachment. So we don't need to have more. We need to stop. The donkey and the carrot similar. You have to be running fast for the carrot to swing away and come back to you. The donkey's only been ambling along and stops. The carrot's not going to move much at all. But obviously most of us have been... We've been striving and struggling for so many lifetimes. So to stop now, to shh and be still, is all that we need to do. So, conclusion. So, Chunda, the way of effacement has been taught by me. The way of inclining the mind has been taught by me. The way of avoidance has been taught by me. The way leading upwards has been taught by me. And the way of extinguishing has been taught by me. What should be done for his disciples out of compassion by a teacher who seeks their welfare and has compassion for them? I have done for you, Chunda. There are these roots of trees, these empty places. Meditate, Chunda. Do not delay, or else you will regret it later. This is our instruction to you. Now that is where you encourage people to actually to do something. Don't just say, okay, I've read the sutta now, don't do anything. No, meditate. The effort should be to get on your cushions, to get on the walking paths, to meditate. Do not delay, or else you will regret it later. There's only a few weeks to go of this retreat. Who knows what's going to happen next? You'll be going to different places. You'll be going back to Taiwan, you'll be going back to Sydney, you'll be going back to wherever you're going. So, be careful. Meditate. Time is running out. So one question each from you two, and then back to your huts and roots of trees, otherwise you'll regret it later. Go. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So jhana is a noun, jayati is a verb. Very good, yes. Very good, yes. Okay. Do not delay, otherwise you regret it, yes. Very good, so we're finished. Sorry?
In the Pali, what is the word meditate?
Jayati, yeah.
Why didn't the Buddha say, develop some samadhi?
Same thing. To do jhanas. That's what the word is.
It's interesting, I guess, because this sutta is mainly about effacement.
Yeah.
But at the end, the kind of exaltation is to develop the jhanas.
That's right, because that's one of the ways of overcoming these things. So keep on meditating, keep on reflecting, keep on practicing. And that way, especially see why these things come up. In the sense of self, and then meditate is part of it. So he's got the instructions here, which they didn't have before. That's the map. Now get the flashlight, and then you'll be okay.
Use the power of that practice to practice effacement.
Yeah, well, this is how effacement works. But again, incline the mind towards the effacement. Realize these negative qualities in the mind. The things, if you do get angry, if you do have some jealousy or some fear, that is a sign that you still have more work to do. So don't just think, oh, I'm enlightened now, don't need to do anything more. But how you actually get rid of those things, that is through meditation. But not just through meditation. How do you get rid of those things? Through the whole Eightfold Path. So just by having a bit of right view, which is what the Buddha is teaching here, that will help. Very good. Okay.
Now let us express our approval of this Dhamma teaching.
Very good. So please go back to your empty huts. If you haven't got an empty hut, find a root of a tree. And meditate.